I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How is everybody? It's Monday. We're going to work against the flow, the disappointment of the beginning of another week, because it may be the end of the world as we know it, people, but I feel okay. How about you, Mark Riley?
I'm feeling great.
That's good, man. That is good.
How's the weekend?
Well, you know, the weekend was good. I just want to reach out to people and say that if you are not a millionaire or a religious fanatic and you support this administration, you are wrong, in denial, and hurting yourselves and this country. So wake up. Good morning. It's Monday. Anyways, how was my weekend? Riley, my weekend was okay, sir. I saw some movies. You know what I did? I sat down and I watched that box set, the Dick Cavett box set. You know Dick Cavett?
We had him
on the show.
Yeah.
Not that he needs my help, but he might, though. Out of all of our guests, Dick Cavett may indeed need our help. But I watched some of the shows from the music box set, and there's like three appearances with Janis Joplin, ranging from 1969 to 1972 or so.
Yeah.
And there are six songs she was performing, 69, 71 maybe. When did she die?
I think she died in 70.
It's all right. So maybe it was 69, 1970, whatever. You know, there were three appearances.
This was when she was by herself after Big Brother and the Holding Company.
No, she was on Big Brother.
Oh, okay.
Once.
All right.
But this is when she was alive, Riley. So she was not dead during these appearances. But nonetheless, I tell you, I didn't live through it. I don't remember her. I remember having the album. My parents had the album. I remember seeing her on the album. But to watch her perform, dude, mind-blowing. Literally, she is the rawest, most exciting, most, you know, disturbing talent I've ever seen perform live in my life. I literally got teared up for reasons I can't even explain, because she's so damn good. It was so exciting to watch.
Wow, you know, I've always thought like George Clinton was the strangest person I ever saw.
Not strange in that way. Just in terms of her, you know, how present she was and how her emotions were so close to the surface. I mean, it's almost disconcerting to see someone on television, because you never see it now.
You don't see it now. Everything's controlled now.
Right, with that type of energy, with just all this emotion coming, it was strange in a good way. It was jarring. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to show my wife's coming in tonight. I can't wait to show her this footage of Janis Joplin, because she was amazing. And also, what's been eating me a little bit is, you know, when did I do Good Morning America on Friday? I can't get this out of my head. You know, the woman I was on with, that woman, Paula Froelich,
yes,
who is the gossip columnist or page six girl for a New York Post, whatever you want to call her. We're standing in the studios over Good Morning America. And she said to me, you should have stayed on Wednesday when I went to audition for this thing. Apparently, Bonnie Raitt was performing live there in the studio, and they were going to tape it. And I didn't stay because I had to come, you know, I had to do something. And she said to me, Bonnie Raitt was great. And I said, well, I'm sure she was. She's great. I once saw Bob Dylan do a sound check over at Letterman.
Oh, okay.
And she just goes, she just looks at me, she goes, no, I don't like Dylan, doesn't do much for me. And now, look, I can understand, all right, that if someone may, you know, pass judgment on some of his songs or whatever, but you can't just dismiss Bob Dylan. You can't. And then I said, well, what do you mean you don't like Dylan? It's like saying you don't like the Beatles. He goes, you know what? I don't like the Beatles either.
Yeah.
How can you just dismiss the Beatles? Like, which part of the Beatles? Now, I'm not.
Did you ask her who she liked?
Yeah, she likes Bonnie Raitt, obviously, which is good. But
yeah.
I don't know whether people say that because they want to be shocking or jarring, or how can you dismiss the Beatles? How can somebody just say, I don't like the Beatles? It's ridiculous.
Hey, let me tell you something. People dismiss jazz. People say, I don't like jazz. Well, they don't know about Miles. They don't know about Coltrane. They don't know about Charlie Parker. They don't even know about Bix Beiderbecke. Well, but they don't like jazz.
Well, my cousin's like that. She finds it, she generalizes and says that jazz, she finds it makes her anxious. All right, so what do you say we do some news and talk about what's going on? First off, let's talk about the passing of a great American playwright.
Ah, yes. August Wilson died yesterday in Seattle at the age of 60. An extraordinary talent, an extraordinary storyteller, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner for Fences in 1987 and The Piano Lesson in 1990. I actually had some friends who were in some of August Wilson's plays, and they demanded much from the actors who were in them, who, by the way, further down the road, looks like a virtual who's who. Charles Dutton, Essa Merkerson, Felicia Rashad, just a whole, Lawrence Fishburne, all mm-hmm. these different people acted in August Wilson plays, largely because they adored the quality of his writing. He was just an extraordinary person.
And also, a lot of them, I think, were young actors, hungry young actors, just starting out. They had the talent, and they broke their careers. He broke them in the sense that this was their first big opportunity on stage, and that led to their screen careers as well.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. You know, Lloyd Richards, who's the head of the Yale Repertory Company, was one of the people who started August Wilson down this path, rejected two of his plays in the late 70s, accepted Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, I believe, the first play that made it to Broadway. In the early 1980s, and just, you know, they collaborated, and most of his work started at Yale Rep and then ended up down here.
And also, it's just a fact that a lot of playwrights were not addressing the African-American experience and writing such, you know, great parts for African-American actors like August Wilson was. And in honor of him, they are renaming the Virginia Theater on Broadway.
Yes.
They are going to be calling that the August Wilson Theater.
The August Wilson Theater, that's going to be unveiled on the 17th of this month. And, you know, I used to see him when he was, when he had his plays on Broadway. He used to eat at this diner on 9th Avenue here in New York all the time. And I'd walk by and I'd just see him. He'd be sitting there by himself, kind of like in the window. Very inconspicuous guy. Didn't seek a lot of attention for himself, but just an extraordinary talent.
I want to make it clear that they are renaming the theater not to honor his passing, but this was in the works before he got ill with cancer. Folks, let's get into this. Look, Ronnie Earl, the guy who's prosecuting Tom DeLay and had laid the indictment on him, he's got some goods, apparently. The grand jury in the DeLay indictment has its work cut out for them because Ronnie Earl apparently just presented a load of evidence, you know, this including testimony and phone records, all leading to the charge of criminal conspiracy. Ronnie Earl is labeling the indictment. It's money laundering for the other two guys, DeLay's lieutenants John Caliandro and Jim Ellis. They're charged with money laundering. But DeLay is charged only with conspiracy, criminal conspiracy, but it could stick. And this is great news. But Tom DeLay on Fox News yesterday said, quote, "I can do my job with or without the title," end quote. This guy's arrogance and hubris is mind-blowing. I hope to God that he goes down or isn't. I hope to God that he is, you know, irreparably challenged and damaged in his political career just out of his complete arrogance and lack of contrition or humility. I can't stand this guy. Also, the indictment, or not the indictment, the hopeful indictment, the grand jury, now that New York Times reporter Judith Miller is out of lockup and has testified before the special prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, his federal grand jury's investigation into the leaking of covert CIA operative Valerie Plame's name, a few things are unclear and some things are resonating with clarity. And that clarity is that there's a lot of hope that he's going to go for a conspiracy charge, which would possibly indict a lot more people than just who we're thinking. Then, you know, whether or not Rove can be touched or whether or not Libby can be touched. If it's actually a conspiracy charge, Riley, am I wrong in assuming that they could actually go as far as Dick Cheney, even the president?
Well, at this point, there are published reports about what about some of the testimony that's gone on before Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury. And that testimony runs completely counter to what the White House has said. In 2003, Scott McClellan, in answer to a direct question, said, no, the vice president wasn't involved. No, Scooter Libby wasn't involved. No, Karl Rove wasn't involved. And it turns out now that Rove and Libby, for sure, spoke to reporters.
Right, at least two of them. But what I like about the conspiracy charge is that it wasn't clear how much Cheney knew, but there is some evidence that he knew a lot more than he says. It's not clear how much Bush knew, but I think there might be mounting evidence that say he knew a lot more than he did. And Andrew Card, White House Chief of Staff, they were all on that plane with that report, you know, before Joe Wilson's, accusations came out. That they all knew who his wife was.
Yeah, they knew who his wife.
So I think that if Fitzgerald goes off to the criminal conspiracy charge, there might be some real exciting stuff happening. It's very hard in both of these cases to determine the difference between. This is what's weird about politics. It becomes difficult in the case of Tom DeLay and also in the case of Plamegate, what the difference is between conspiracy and just political strategizing.
Well, that is exactly the cover that these folks decided to stand behind. They know that it's difficult. They're now, you know, delays people are saying, well, the $190,000 that's at issue here was a different $190,000 from the $155,000 that was given. They have a million different ways to try and hide behind stuff. And that is why the criminal conspiracy situation in the Plaingate case, which, by the way, fell off the radar during the course of the hurricanes and now suddenly is back with Judith Miller, now they're starting to look at whether or not these folks got together because Dick Cheney was upset that he was named in one published report as the person who sent Joe Wilson over to Niger. That's what triggered this entire thing.
Well, he must have been, and that was right. That was what was being lost, is that he was trying to say, the vice president's office was trying to say that he just went. You know,
yeah,
his wife
he just went. His wife said
suggested it. But one thing that is clear, after all is said and done, is that Judith Miller is a Republican stooge who toes the party line and helped build the false weapons of mass destruction case for the neocon death cult to validate the invasion of Iraq. It seems that she did jail time solely to resurrect or protect her reputation and whatever reputation the New York Times has left. It was a publicity stunt to buttress her integrity. It is doubtful that anything she said will shed new light on the case, really, or would lead to any changes in and of themselves. But it is clear that she was in jail because she wanted to be in jail. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Bali bombing, where six Americans were injured, but 26. At least people were killed. About 100 people were injured. Also want to talk a little bit about something else that the Bush administration has done. They broke the law in terms of getting behind propaganda initiatives that were presented as news, and they have been found by the Government Accountability Office to be guilty of violating the law. Boy, it's just stacking up with these guys. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about the Government Accountability Office, which, by the way, is an independent, nonpartisan arm of Congress, has concluded in a new report that Bush and company have broken the law. The administration violated laws in allowing the Education Department to buy favorable news coverage and use Armstrong Williams, Republican stooge and commentator, to disperse those through columns and on television, and also fake news reporters to disperse them to news outlets on video. We're going to get into that in a second. But first, a nearly synchronized series of three suicide bomber explosions killed at least 26 people and injured about 100 in three different restaurants in Bali on Saturday. This is a heinous bit of terrorism. I'll tell you that. Not that any of it is any less heinous than the other, but suicide bombers synchronized three different restaurants. Indonesian officials have linked the bombing to a couple of fugitives linked with the Indonesian Al-Qaeda franchise, Lima Islamia Terror Group. These are the same guys that were accused of orchestrating the 2002 Bali nightclub bombings and a couple of other attacks in Bali in 2003 and 2004. As you recall, those nightclub bombings killed about 202 people. Apparently, this guy, the president of Indonesia, says that this isn't going to be the end of this. They're doing everything they can, but it is the most Muslim-populated country in the world.
Yeah, it is. But Bali, interestingly enough, is a little Hindu corner of Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
And what you find happening in this particular instance, and one of the things that's eerily similar to what happened in London, is that apparently they have a videotape of one of the bombers walking into the seafood restaurant, taken by a family that was inside the restaurant. They see the guy walk by with a backpack, and next thing you know, they hear this gigantic explosion, and apparently they're trying to trace, because the bombers are all dead, that's obvious. But they are trying to now trace their movements and trace what they were doing through this particular videotape. And apparently there was another tape of these at least one bomber casing the place beforehand as well.
Well, that's all good news. But, the bottom line is that the proliferation of terrorism is very hard to stifle in any of these countries. Even if they catch a couple of guys, it seems that these terrorists, these organizations, are willing to wait and pick their moments. I mean, there's a concern on behalf of the Indonesian president that they are still scouting for, you know, soft targets, that they're constantly looking around, and that they're doing everything they can there. But clearly, whatever they were doing wasn't enough to stifle three separate suicide bombing attacks. Now, here's what's interesting is that Karen Hughes, as you know, who is the robotic Christo-fascist den mother of the neocon death cult and Bush's old babysitter and communications director, is now running around Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey as Undersecretary of State. Her job, trying to sell them on how wonderful America is, and that we are there to help, and that they are misunderstanding our intentions. She plans to sell them basically on how great America is and why we should be respected. Unfortunately, Miss Hughes, Karen Hughes, Mrs. Hughes, Ms., unfortunately, she is a radical Christian who cannot help but put her God in her language, and her views on terrorism are childish and naive and may help the proliferation of terrorism. Now, this is according, not to me, but a friend of the show, Robert Pape, who wrote a book called Dying to Win, The Strategic Logic of Suicide Terrorism. Basically, Karen Hughes said, quote, terrorists, their policies force young people and other people's daughters and sons to strap on bombs and blow themselves up, end quote. That is a complete, very shallow, way of describing what suicide bombing is. And basically, what Robert Pape says from his book and in response to this is that, quote, it is stunning to the extent Hughes is helping bin Laden. If you set out to help bin Laden, you could not have done it better than with Karen Hughes. He says, quote, of the key conditions that lead to suicide terrorism in particular, there first must be the presence of foreign combat forces on the territory and that the terrorists on the territory that is the terrorist prize. The second condition is a religious difference between the combat forces and the local community. The religious difference matters in that it enables terrorist leaders to paint foreign forces as being driven by religious goals, end quote. And you could not have picked a better or worse person to represent this country in terms of religious fanaticism than Karen Hughes.
Well, what you have is a woman who can't help herself, as Mark just pointed out, cannot help herself in speaking to different groups of people, invoking Christianity, cloaking herself in Christianity. At the same time bin Laden is saying to people, if there was a religious goal, and he believes there was a religious goal to the invasion of Iraq, that goal must be confronted. So Karen Hughes goes over there and vindicates everything this man has been saying about why terror must continue.
And to speak in this language, this strange, kind of like limited American metaphoric language of strength and godliness is a mistake in that region of the world. I don't know if you knew this, but intentionally distributing propaganda is actually against the law
in
this country. Yeah, I know it's hard to believe given the nature of advertising, but
really?
Bush and company are guilty of it, and they've been proven guilty. We'll get into that in a second here on Morning Sedition, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's Monday. It's going to be okay. It really is. It's going to be okay. Either way, it's going to be okay, even though it's Monday. Look, Morning Sedition at the end of this week is heading to New Jersey. New Jersey, birthplace.
Yeah.
My birthplace and the birthplace of Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman. Whose family's still out there in New Jersey. We are going to be at Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, this Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Come by, have some free coffee, hang out. We're hopefully going to have a great show. How's that? I feel strong about it. I think it's going to happen. Sometimes when you read the headlines, we're going to get into this in a minute. Propaganda is real. And not only is it real, it's real in this country, in the same way that they used it, that they did it in Soviet Russia, in North Korea. I mean, this is crazy stuff that this administration is guilty of and how organized it is. Again, there is no liberal media. There is irresponsible media, and then there is right-wing outlets of propaganda. That is it. And it's been proven now by the Government Accountability Office that they are guilty. The Bush neocon death cult and the Bush and company, this administration, is guilty of propaganda in the biggest way. But you know what? it doesn't matter. They're not going to go to jail. No one gets busted. No one's going to do time. The amount of money spent is negligible in terms of what they achieve from it. But it's still, we've got the story. I'm going to give it to you in a second. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Wow. Yes. Good. Brendan's already on vacation. I swear to God, he's thinking Mexico. He's thinking wedding. It's weird when you're about to get married. If you didn't know, Brendan P.W. McDonald, our producer, is about to get married. He's about to take the big step. So he's got that weird mixture of, like, he knows he's going to Mexico, but before that, oh, my God, he's got to get married. There's people. It's going to be nuts, guy.
I don't know. The wedding is, I'm very zen about it. It's been, you know, it's been a year in the making. It's not going to be a big deal.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Well, he's mellow. Yeah, well, he's cool with it.
Why don't you give us a call here that morning?
That'd be the first thing on my mind.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks. I thought of it more of a supportive thing. I was reaching out there, not to mock you and your anxiety when that happens.
You know, Chris was wondering who's going to do the iNews, at the live broadcast this Friday. It's copyrighted, so I don't really feel comfortable with other people.
You know, I understand that, but you know, you're going to be gone, so I think maybe we might have to have an audience member do it. Maybe.
How about Dave Little Goliath?
Rich Two Bagels.
We got Rich Two Bagels do it. What do you say we do the bit now, though? What do you think?
That'd be awesome.
From ABC News, Bush, Iraqi military showing progress. Bush, Iraqi military showing progress. Translation, Bush lays groundwork for U.S. cut and run. Yeah, that's the truth. From Newsday, Army faces worst recruiting slump in years. Translation, long-term unemployment preferable to death. From Washington Post, biologists observe gorillas using tools. Translation, God to humans, you can be replaced. Wait, there's another one. Home Depot to open Burundi branch. That was some funny stuff, man. All right, here we go. The Government Accountability Office, which if you don't know, is an independent, nonpartisan arm of Congress, concludes in a new report that Bush and company broke the law big time. The administration violated laws in allowing the Education Department to buy favorable news coverage of Bush's education policies by making payments to, first of all, to conservative commentator Armstrong Williams, but they used the PR firm Kitchum Incorporated. Now, Kitchum is, you know, a big Republican stooge outlet. Kitchum has received a whopping $100.5 million in federal contracts, and they include work for the Education Department here, which was illegal, the Internal Revenue Service, the U.S. Army, to, quote, reconnect the Army with the American people. Apparently, they're not that great a publicity outfit, because that's not working, is it?
Nope.
Also, they did some work for the Health and Human Services Department. $100.5 million has gone into this PR firm. The other violation was in not just Armstrong Williams, but it was in relation to those fake news videos that we talked about a lot when they were, you know, revealed initially. These were actual news videos released through Kitchum PR firm by the Department of Medicare. That was Medicare. Wasn't. Yeah. Those were the Medicare reports where they just funnel them out to news outlets. And these were not labeled as, you know, government statements. They were not labeled as coming from the government. And they were presented as news to the point where the woman who was the anchor on these reports said, you know, this is what's her name? Ryan.
Karen
this is
Ryan.
Karen Ryan in Washington. So this is completely, it's a sham because it doesn't tell people what's really happening. People who are watching it might think they were real news. People who are listening to Armstrong Williams might think that he was just presenting his opinion where it was bought and paid for, and that's against the law.
Well, you know, it is amazing that the Education Department and to some extent the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, which has tried to alibi all of this foolishness, end up talking out of both sides of their mouth. On the one hand, the Education Department says that the payments to Armstrong Williams were, quote, no more than the legitimate dissemination of information to the public. On the other hand, the Education Department apparently has no records of transcripts, speeches, articles, any kind of services provided by Armstrong Williams. So How can you say that it's legitimate dissemination of information if you don't know what he did?
Well, that was probably through the PR firm. That was in kitchen business. But the education department spent $38,000 for production and distribution of the video news release and $96,850 for the evaluation of newspaper articles and radio and television programs. Now, this was all done through Kitchen Incorporated. And what you do when you have a PR service is you pay them to do clippings. You pay them to, so what they were doing is wrangling all this information, putting it into packages, so it has a strong, you know, right-leaning bias, you know, on behalf of the administration, and it's just presented as information. So the crime is, bottom line, the accountability office said on Friday, quote, the failure of an agency to identify itself as the source of prepackaged news story misleads the viewing public by encouraging the audience to believe that the broadcasting news organization developed the information. The prepackaged news stories are purposely designed to be indistinguishable from news segments broadcast to the public. When the television viewing public does not know what the stories they watched on television news programs about the government were, in fact, prepared by the government, the stories are, in this sense, no longer purely factual. The essential fact of attribution is missing. End quote. That's a brilliant thing. So what that is that these news outlets, we talked about this before, they don't have programmers. They're dying for content. They're like, a lot of them didn't even know it was propaganda, maybe, but some of them, like, you know,
they knew.
Kincaid.
Of them knew.
Yeah, exactly. They just throw it on there as news, and now they're busted. Unfortunately, this busting, outside of us disseminating the information and outside of the information getting out there, does not have any real criminal penalty. It just goes on the books, right?
No, it just goes on the books. But consider this for a moment. You're looking now at a situation where in March, when this whole thing broke earlier, the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel said that federal agencies didn't even have to say that they had a role in producing these news segments if they were factual. Now, go back to Karen Ryan, the woman who did this voiceover for and actually did a television news report for the Education Department.
Failed actress.
The video news release. It said that President Bush's program for providing remedial instruction and tutoring children, quote, gets an A+. Now, that's factual? Is that supposed to be factual? Is that what they're saying when the Justice Department says, well, we don't have to acknowledge anything as long as it's the truth? Now, this woman's saying Bush gets an A+. Is that supposed to be somebody's truth?
Well, no. I think what it was supposed to be was to sort of mock the cute little buttons that, you know, people do at the end of, like, human interest stories. Like, you know, I mean, of course it's not true. But to just an idiot who's watching the show, they just think it's like, oh, it's the news reporter being cute and clever.
Yeah.
People who watch and process this type of information are very rarely critical. And what they absorb is what they absorb. And the bottom line on this was, yeah, of course that is infactual. But the way they presented it, because it was a news program, people just don't question this kind of stuff, where this information is coming from, and they just assume, like, oh, the president's good.
Yeah, well, I wonder if it's still going on the down low, because most people didn't know it was going on before.
Well, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't even need to be on the down low to some degree, because it just seems that so many of the news outlets, Basic Cable in particular, are so non-critical of content, and so, you know, demanding of content, so hungry for content. A lot of times it's not that they're putting, you know, falsehoods necessarily out there, but they aren't, you know, vetting it for proper bias.
Oh, no. And, you know, it's funny. You know, I've been on programs with Armstrong Williams before. They still don't know, because they don't have any records, whether he actually performed the services that Catch and Paid gave him all this money for. And by the way, this is not, you know, money that they get from private foundations. This is taxpayer money. When people jump up and scream about how much taxpayer money is spent for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting or some of these other outlets, no one ever says, why are we spending money to, you know, and giving money to people like Armstrong Williams and Karen Ryan and all these other people to produce this fake news?
That's it. It comes out of our pockets,
of
and they're
course.
Not telling us about it. Absolutely. That is the big issue, outside of the issue that it's part of the hypnotic effect of the repetition of talking points that the neocon death cult has held the brains of this country hostage. As I said earlier, if you're not a millionaire or a religious fanatic and you support this administration, you are wrong, in denial, and hurting yourselves in this country. So please, do us all a favor and wake up. Look, in a second, we're going to talk about how Bush is trying to resurrect Bush. The angle of his handlers is to get Bush away from selling new policy. and talk about hurricane recovery, Iraq, the Supreme Court, and apparently we have some breaking news about Bush's nomination for the Supreme Court. That in a moment. It is now 45 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Forty-nine past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey,
it is Monday. Hope you're well. Hope you had a decent weekend. Hope you're not sad today. It's all right. It's going to be all right. That's all I'm telling you. It will. I swear to God, it'll be all right. Even if it is the end of the world, we have a lot to talk about. We do. I want to talk more about the evidence against DeLay. Apparently, Ronnie Earl has got a stack of it. I do want to talk more about who could be implicated in the big Plamegate leak probe, because now that Judith Miller has done her little bit and tried to save her reputation by doing time in jail, it's now there's some speculation that it might he might be Fitzgerald in the grand jury, might be a federal grand jury, might be going after conspiracy charges, which could really throw a pretty big net, or a broad net, or whatever that saying is, on just about anybody involved in this administration, all the way up to the president himself. But here's what I was telling you before. It seems that the president is going to announce his Supreme Court nomination for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's position at 8 o'clock. So that's in about an hour and 15 minutes. And we're going to take some bets, folks. Here we go. We're going to take some bets here in the studios. And you can email you what you think as well. I'm going myself. I'm going to go. I know this sounds crazy, but I'm going with Alberto Gonzalez. I believe that because he could make history by nominating a Hispanic person to the justice position, and because of the relationship they've had and how loyal Alberto Gonzalez has been. Now, the sad thing about Alberto Gonzalez is there's speculation that he will be easily confirmed because he does have support from some Democrats. So who do you think, Pashman?
I'm going with this woman, Edith Joy Brown Clement.
Okay, so are you writing these down?
What was rumored, I think, to be the pick the last time.
Yeah.
The Roberts pick. Was she not?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
who are you going with, Riley?
I'm going with Harriet Myers, and I'm going to tell you why.
Oh, you bastard. You took my pick.
Remember that when Dick Cheney was part of the team looking for a vice president, what did Bush do? He picked Dick Cheney to be his vice presidential running mate.
Okay.
Well, Harriet Myers has been one of the people central to the search process for possible nominees, and I think Bush is going to do the same thing again. He's going to pick the woman who was part of the search process to be the person.
And how far right is she?
Pretty far right. But okay. She's also one of these people, like Roberts, who's got a kind of nebulous past, nebulous enough, I think, for Bush to think he can get her through the confirmation process.
And also, let's understand where Bush is right now in his presidency. This is a guy whose approval ratings are in the crapper. His response to Katrina was horrendous. It even disturbs me that, people are now, giving him back a couple of points because of his response to Rita. I'm going to get into that in a second. Apparently, the angle of his handlers, of Bush's handlers within the administration, is to really get Bush away from selling new policy business. All right, Social Security's dead. You can't the tax cuts are. You can't talk about that right now. And he needs still to do damage control. And they're focusing on three things: hurricane recovery, Iraq, the Supreme Court. It's four things, and energy issues relating to gas prices and alternative fuels, perhaps. But I doubt he'll get into that. But these are the things that are going to start pressuring down on him and put his approval ratings completely in the toilet. I mean, he could go below 30 if this momentum keeps up, which I hope it does. Now, first, let's start with hurricane recovery. Bush went, he went up a couple of points in the polls, as I said, for his response to Rita. And I just want to ask you, are people stupid? This is the president. It's not a four-year-old. You shouldn't be impressed if he learns something from after an incompetent mistake. He's the president. Bush is the president, and he failed the people of this country when all the shortcomings of Republican policy flooded New Orleans. Just because a week or two later he prepared for a much smaller hurricane does not mean he gets a pass in any way. Or should I say gold star or smiley face? Whatever you want to say. He does not get the most improved president star. You know? I mean, screw that. I mean, what are people? They're just stupid.
No, but remember something. He went up about 5 points in the wake of his work with Rita. Now, assuming that there were 1,500 people sampled, that means only 75 of them thought he was doing a better job. That's not a whole bunch of people.
Thank you. That makes me feel better. All right, now with The Rock. Iraq has become bottom line, Iraq has become a hands-on terrorist training camp and an unwinnable guerrilla war. Bush will take, he's going to start talking about the number of votes that will turn out to vote on the Constitution as being amazing progress. He is, he's already said in his radio address, quote, "I'm encouraged by the increasing size and capability of the Iraqi security forces." Today, they have more than 100 battalions operating throughout the country, and our commanders report that the Iraqi forces are serving with increasing effectiveness, end quote. This totally contradicts a statement by General George Casey from the Army last week, who said the number of Iraqi battalions capable of going into combat without help from the U.S. troops had dropped since July from three, down to one out of roughly 100 Iraqi battalions. Blatantly, he is lying to the American people in order to resurrect his image. And the bottom line is that the threat of it becoming a terrorist camp or a terrorist state like Afghanistan, what is better? I mean, there's already a theocratic contingency that is probably going to rule the country.
Well, there is going to be, in all likelihood, an Iraqi... I guess you might want to call it a theocracy. At this point, though, what Bush just described there sounds more like he's talking about the insurgents than he's talking about the government or that he's talking about the Iraqi troops. His own general says one, he says 100. Who are you supposed to believe?
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you supposed to believe?
I'll go with the general. I don't like, this is their sort of weird kind of this game they play where everybody says contradicting things so nobody knows the truth. And if they can fool, enough of the people, they're fine with it.
He's going to speak on Thursday about this. I don't know what in God's name he's going to say.
I'm picking Alberto Gonzalez. We're going to hear George Bush's nomination for Supreme Court Justice, who is going to fill Sandra Day O'Connor's place at 8 o'clock. I'm going with Alberto Gonzalez. Now, listen.
What are the stakes on this, Maron?
The stakes are whoever wins. Yes. But I'm not going to eat steak. But the stakes are whoever wins gets taken out to dinner by everybody else. And I would like to, if I win, wear a crown of some kind.
Whoever wins wears the crown.
Yes.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. Now, Brendan and I both had the same
person. That bastard
I just got to it first. Now, if he wins, I am willing to share
my
winning.
No, I got a new pick. I'm going to go with Janice Rogers Brown.
Oh, forget about it.
I want to take the long shot because I want to see a fight. That's why I'm going to
pick a black person, pick Larry Thompson. He's got
a better
shot.
Wait, what about our researcher, John? He reads all this stuff here.
John Crimmins.
John's actually here today, so we might as well ask
him. Hey, that's no fair. He's got inside information.
This is only the second time I've actually seen John.
I was going to say Larry Thompson, too. But
Okay. All right, well, then two for Thompson.
No.
Wait, nobody else had Thompson.
He said Thompson.
Okay. All right, so he's got Thompson. What about Goliath?
Wait, hey, Dave, little Goliath, Big Dave. Like, hey.
Jerry Garcia?
I'm sure you've been thinking a lot about this.
Colonel Kurtz?
Yeah, who do you got? What do you got?
Wapner.
Come on, Dave.
Yeah, Judge Wapner.
Judge Judy.
That's cold.
Hey, Dave, I'll tell you what. Why don't you think about it for a few weeks, and we'll get back to you. It's 57 past the hour. We're going to talk about Tom DeLay, and we're looking forward to this Supreme Court nominee. You know, obviously it's going to be bad, but can't we have fun? We're going to have fun. It's the end of the world, but it's okay. 57 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 6 past the hour. Good morning, folks. How are you? It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Look, we got a little bit of breaking news. It seems that about an hour, George W. Bush is going to announce his nomination for the Supreme Court replacement of Sandra Day O'Connor. We're taking bets here in the studio. Where's my list? I want my list.
Uh-oh.
Where's my list?
Yeah. I got it right here, Chris.
Chris.
I'm talking to Chris over here.
Wait, what we're doing here, that's Brendan P.W. McDonald. What we're doing here is we're trying to figure out, we're taking bets on who he's going to nominate. I'm going with Alberto Gonzalez, right, which is not a good thing, but I think that's where my money is right now.
Well, you got Alberto Gonzalez, and Riley had Harriet Myers.
I have Harriet Myers, but I have a dark horse.
Okay, but you don't get dinner off of this one.
I know, I don't get dinner off of this one, but if it's not going to be Myers, watch Maura Corrigan.
Who the hell is that?
Former head of the Michigan Supreme Court.
Okay.
And dark horse candidate of Riley.
Okay, so
that, and you know what? It's like we're going to give him that because that means he gets basically two. So even
no, I'm not taking dinner off of this.
No, it's not a matter of dinner, but
just so that he can go like, well, I did have it right.
Right, exactly. See what I mean?
No, my choice is still Myers.
Why take two also then?
Go ahead, everybody take two. All of you, go ahead. Who you got?
I know that strategy.
Who you got, Barry Bonds?
That's the I'm not going to look stupid strategy. I know that one.
No, Myers is still my first pick.
I don't know why he should feel. I picked Harriet Myers. I only backed off because I didn't want us both to have it, but I think that's a good choice. I think he's probably going to be right.
Okay, good.
All right, so then we have Pashman with Edith Clement, who was the decoy pick Roberts was selected. I'm going with Janice Rogers Brown because I want to see a fight.
Right.
And we got Crimmings here says Larry Thompson is, and that he is a corporate lawyer of some stripe that they might pick. We had Goliath in here. He picked Judge Joe Brown.
Oh, wow.
What? Not Judge Mathis?
No. Yeah. And, Kalo has Judge Reinhold.
All right. So now that we've got everybody represented, you know, I got to be honest with you. There is no shame in not caring. Because in some sense, Kalo and little Goliath, live in the world that they've chosen for themselves, and they don't follow this stuff as closely because they have other things to do. Right, Chris?
Right.
Yeah, like what are some of those things?
Tuna. Some smoked bluefish.
Yeah. Uh-oh. And that's my life. Yeah, I ran into you at the green market. I'm at the lesbian fish market, which I'm saying because it is. I don't know. I wish I knew more about it. But they have the best fish. And there's no irony or joke here. It's just the way it is. But they
whoa.
it was my virgin experience, and I must say it was awesome.
Yeah, I ran into Chris at the market. He says, "Where are you going?" I'm going over to this fish market, and I showed him what I bought: the fresh tuna, the fresh albacore, and the smoked bluefish, which is excellent.
You've just kicked the Marino brothers to the curb, haven't you?
No, this is only
admit
once
it.
A week. This is
admit
only once
it.
A...
The Marino brother, Marino and Sons. Is off in the dustbin of fish history
for
Mark
Maron. No, that's not true. This
You've
is
gone a, to the lesbian fish the, market, this is and the, you're not going back.
This is, I think it's a Blue Moon fish market is what it's called, Blue something, but I'll check into it. They don't have a website or nothing. But the Marino guys are still in. I haven't seen them in a couple of weeks, but they're the local thing. But this is a once-a-week thing. They're only there Wednesday at the green market. For those of you who don't know John Crimmins, he's our researcher, our resident boy genius, who is now here with us.
Yes. Welcome.
Hey.
How you doing, John? Welcome to the crew. It's nice to see you, man.
Yeah.
It's nice to attach a personality and a human form to the guy that provides us such essential information in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and by the way, thanks for picking the brother, too. For
There you go. That's a special shout-out from the brother.
Yeah, special shout-out for picking Larry Thompson, who most people think is a football player.
All right, so first, before we get into any real news, I think we want to announce the passing of August Wilson, one of the great American playwrights who died of liver cancer the day before yesterday.
In Seattle, Washington, a man of extraordinary gifts, won two Pulitzer Prizes about 3 years apart, 1987 for Fences, 1990 for The Piano Lesson, launched and helped jumpstart the careers of at least a dozen black actors and actresses that people are very familiar with, including Esapatha Murkison, who's on Law & Order, Charles Dutton, a host of people. And his work, I think, will probably not be duplicated while we're alive in terms of just the body of work and the texture of black life that August Wilson brought to the stage.
Associated Press is reporting that it's Harriet Myers.
Oh!
So somebody...
What time's dinner, yo? Well, yeah. Let's wait until Bright Eyes himself gets up there and says who
we
it
need
is.
Confirmation of the confirmation.
Yes.
Now we are waiting confirmation of the confirmation. Yeah, you know, so I'm glad you're right, Riley, but still.
It irritates me.
He's not right yet. I'm
not right yet. I'm probably going to be right, but hey, the problem is that George Bush now has had to, I think, adjust his thinking on the Supreme Court pick in light of all of this bad news he's been experiencing, starting with Hurricane Katrina. Had Katrina and Rita and the rest of this stuff not happened, maybe he would have thought of somebody else. But right now, he's got to repair his image, and Harriet Myers is probably the easiest person for him to pick to do that.
All right, well, the official...
Now I'm rooting for Riley to be wrong, by the way.
The official announcement is coming at 8 o'clock. We'll hear from the president. As you know, John Roberts, I was disappointed. I don't like the guy, but it seems that we have to settle for somebody conservative. Harriet Myers is, how out there is she, Riley?
Well, see, that's the thing. She's nebulous. She's vague. She's going to be able
like
to
Roberts?
Go up. Yeah, exactly. She's going to go before the court and do this. Well, Roe v. Wade is the settled law of the land, but I think that under certain circumstances we can revisit, which is exactly what Roberts
but
said.
But I have a feeling that Roberts, as soon as he gets the opportunity, is going to immediately begin the legal work of relegating women to baby makers and making sure the minorities stay poor. You know, I think that's what he's going to do, Riley.
Well, I'll tell you. He's in a situation as Chief Justice where certainly he gets to help guide the course of arguments before the court. Remember that the court is in session today. Today is the first session of the new court. This is the time that Roberts is actually going to be presiding over the court, dealing with a host of issues from, important ones right down to whether or not Anna Nicole Smith gets any money from her dead man.
As I've been saying, I think that's an important women's issue. I think a lot of women are already in the field or thinking about getting into the field of gold digging, and I think that benefits are important when
hey,
he makes that
too.
Sort of, yeah. You're going to have some work to do. You might want to take off a few pounds. Who the hell are you going to? I mean, come on, Kayla. Let's be honest. You're going to get into gold digging? Who are you going to get?
Paris Hilton, maybe?
Oh, yeah. That's going to happen.
Whitney Houston.
Maybe you should go back to Staten Island, find some 80-year-old woman who doesn't know what to do with her money and is bored.
The old women do like me.
Yeah, I know. 80, well, good. Have a good time with that. You can provide an important service to some elderly person.
You
I think it's very
to
nice.
The Staten Island Zoo.
Yeah, you take him to the zoo. That's right. Maybe sit them down, buy them some soda and some popcorn.
Have you ever been to the landfill? It's great.
All kinds of interesting birds come to the,
Right. landfill. Who was that guy that married Martha Ray? The old the
Wilbur Mills?
No. Wilbur Mills used to be a congressman from Arkansas.
What was the name of that one? What was the name of the woman that he was in love with?
Fanny Fox, the Tidal Basin Bombshell.
All right, there you go.
No, when you start talking about K-Lo and older women, Martha Ray was like in her 80s or 90s or something, and she married a guy who was in his 30s.
Right. Well, there you go, K-Lo. That sounds good.
There's hope for you.
Yeah, we can't wait to. But that's going to be some exciting stories on the air. Yeah, let us know how that goes.
Yeah.
We'll take a whole new approach to this morning radio thing, and how instead of like lurid sexual exploits of strippers and pornography, and we'll have K-Lo coming and telling stories about living with an 80-year-old woman in Staten Island. Who's going to judge us for that? You know what I mean?
Fixit-in really works, guys. I've never thought of it before, but it's awesome.
For so many things.
I surprised her in the shower.
All right. Wow. And I was going to talk about delay.
Wow.
That's all right. We've taken it a new direction.
Yeah.
I think that's great. But as I was saying, though, it is an important case, Anna Nicole Smith, because if you're going to pretend like you love somebody and have sex with them, you deserve to retire comfortably after they die. So it's 15 past the hour. We will get into delay. We will get into the unfolding of Plaingate after Judith Miller's testimony. Interesting thing about both of these is it seems that the prosecutors are going after conspiracy charges, which I think is a smart thing, and we'll talk about that in a second. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You gotta keep them separated.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State, here to remind you that God and politics don't mix. That's why I get my God from the Good Book and my politics from Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 20 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
I'm sorry, I made a mistake. John Crimmings. I said Crimmins because we got a comedian that works
Barry
with him.
Crimmins.
John Crimmings, the boy genius, is our researcher who is in the studio with us now, helping us out.
And relation to Barry Crimmins.
No, because it's a different name, right?
Okay, just
Crimmings.
Just want to know.
Oh. Yeah, he's related to him, but he was so ashamed he put a G at the end
of his
name.
Yeah, there you go.
I know. I knew it was G. It was my mistake. I don't want to make the guy feel like I didn't know him. I think he's doing a great job. up here.
He is.
Hey, look, we're going to do the job listing here in just a second. I do want to say, as you know, that the AP, Associated Press, has said that Harriet Myers is going to be the nomination that Bush chooses to replace Sandra Day O'Connor, but they were wrong once before. The official announcement is coming at 8 o'clock. Apparently, right as we speak, the conservative right-wing blogs are going nuts. RedState.org has a post on there that says, quote, let him feel the wrath of the base, end quote. That's referring to George W. Bush. The wrath of the base. I'll have you know, I'd like to see just how big that base really is at this point in time, because it's my belief that if you are not a millionaire or a religious fanatic and you support this administration, you are wrong, you are in denial, and hurting yourselves and this country.
So, wrath of the base? How is he going to feel the wrath of the base? He's already been reelected.
They're going to stomp up and down and cry.
Okay.
Well, obviously,
cry.
The base isn't that big if he's not picking someone that will
accommodate them.
Yes.
Yeah, he's used them. He's already gotten what he needs from them, you know. And now that base, who do they have to represent them? You know, Tom DeLay's going down. Bill Frist can't even fake.
Pat Robertson's still out there.
Pat Robertson.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
A beacon of sanity.
What is he going to say?
And Bill Bennett now, too.
Bill Bennett. Oh, there you go. They love him.
The gambler.
He's going to be in charge of the department. He's going to be like the theocracy's new Eichmann.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to be in charge of, the ethnic cleansing of the country. Anyways, the uncomfortable laugh of Dan Pastrom. Hey, that doesn't seem funny. I'm sorry. Hey, Chris, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. You're not fat, baby. You look great.
Thank you.
You look great. I love to see you in a bathing suit. Yeah, it's all right. Everything's all right.
Sound pretty uptown to me.
It is uptown. Uptown on the low down. Is that what you're saying to me? What are we talking about now? We're going to get into this DeLay thing. You know, Borzu Daragahi is going to be with us in a little while. He's the Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist. He usually calls us from Iraq. It's always good to see him here in the studio, safe and sound. Right now, we know a lot of people are out of work and spend Sunday leafing through the one ads or monster.com. We want to help be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here's our morning sedition Monday job listing. Well, folks, the Republicans found a replacement for Tom DeLay as House Majority Leader. Now it seems they might be looking for someone to replace him in his real job. Check out the listing we just found. Wanted, gravy train engineer. Major political party has an immediate opening for an individual to facilitate the exchange of unthinkable amounts of money for ungodly levels of influence. This is a position of enormous responsibility and impact. We are looking for someone who can inflict lasting damage on the American dream. Necessary skills include the ability to intimidate. Yeah, that should about do it. Prior experience should be applicable to the position. The person leaving this post had been an exterminator, so a background of killing things is a definite plus. Benefits include virtually unlimited power, plus health and dental. This job involves extensive travel, but all of it is lavishly paid for by people willing to tongue massage your colon for a few seconds of access. If you are interested, please steal, cheat, bully, and threaten your way into a position to ruthlessly eliminate all other applicants. There you go. Ain't that the truth? Well, that's the good news here on the DeLay front, is that as cocky as he's acting and that he can get on TV yesterday and say, quote, I can do my job with or without the title, end quote. The grand jury in the DeLay indictment apparently has been handed just tons and tons of evidence from Ronnie Earl, the prosecutor. This is evidence including testimony, phone records. And the great thing about this, and I didn't realize this, is that he's going after a money laundering charge on behalf of DeLay's lieutenants, John Caliano and Jim Ellis, but DeLay is going to be charged with conspiracy. And this is interesting because also in the federal grand jury, prosecutor Fitzgerald is being rumored to be going after a conspiracy charge in the investigation of the leaking of Valerie Plame's identity. So it may not just focus on Karl Rove or Scooter Libby. If he goes with a conspiracy charge, it can go as high up as the president, because you can throw a much broader, you know, wider net with that. Now, the bottom line is, in Texas, in terms of House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, the basic criminal conduct in a conspiracy charge is only agreeing. The defendant must agree with one or more persons, and then one or more of them participates in an action that is a felony. Under most circumstances, a person is considered part of a conspiracy even if he or she didn't realize the act that they agreed upon was illegal. So whether or not DeLay or any defendant believed the conduct intended to be committed was criminal or not is irrelevant. Technically, under the law, all he had to do was agree to a transaction that turned out to be illegal. And that transaction was essentially funneling money from corporations through the Republican National Committee back into the campaigns of candidates for state legislature in Texas. So this is I think he's got a real case here. And in terms of the Plain Valerie Plain case with Karl Rove, Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney, and even Bush. I mean, what we're seeing here, you know, actually, why don't we hear that sound from Stephanopoulos? George Stephanopoulos on ABC This Week is talking to George Will about Patrick Fitzgerald's federal grand jury investigation into the Plain case.
It's definitely a political problem, but I wonder, George Will, do you think it's a manageable one for the White House, especially if we don't know whether Fitzgerald is going to write a report or have indictments, but if he is able to show, as a source close to this told me this week, that President Bush and Vice President Cheney were actually involved in some of these discussions.
I don't think writing a report is part of the prosecutor's job description.
Well, you know, George Will, what a snot. What an ass. Ugh. But the bottom line is that what Stephanopoulos is saying, and I think what he's probably citing in terms of his source, is that if Fitzgerald, if the federal grand jury goes after a conspiracy charge, it can go all the way up to the top. And there's no reason not to believe that all of these guys knew about it. And from all indications, there is no reason, and we learned nothing from Judith Miller's testimony other than that she is a Republican stooge who toes the party line and might have had some sort of concern for her integrity or her reputation in the world of journalism, so she chose to stay in prison. So this is exciting stuff. As I said earlier, the nominee of Supreme Court Justice will be at 8 o'clock. Yeah, Riley?
8 o'clock Eastern.
You still feel strong about it, Harriet Myers?
Yeah, I'm still looking at Harriet Myers, absolutely.
AP says it's Harriet Myers, but that doesn't mean anything until the president says
we'll be going to City Island for dinner, y'all.
27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're counting down here to 8 o'clock when George Bush is going to announce his new nomination for the Supreme Court, replacement of Sandra Day O'Connor. We got a little pool going in house. I am going with Alberto Gonzalez. Mark Riley is taking Harriet Myers, who Associated Press has said will be the nomination. She's 60 years old. She is a Bush loyalist, unmarried, no kids, nebulous, as Riley characterizes
nebulous.
Her. Pashman is going with
Edith Clement.
Edith Clement, very good. McDonald has
Janice Rogers Brown.
Okay. John Crimmings is going with
Larry Thompson.
Okay. Little Goliath is going with
Judge Hatchett.
Judge Joe Brown.
Oh, Judge Joe Brown.
I want to hear Goliath say it. I just want to hear his voice. Say it.
Who are you going with, Goliath?
I'm going with Judge Joe Brown.
That's good.
I was going to go with Judge Judy, though.
Oh, yeah.
But then I decided.
You know what's funny?
I said it's going to be a woman or a minority.
You know what's funny, though, is he was pressured to make that choice. That's the funny part. And Kayla, of course.
Judge Reinhold.
Good for you. That's a real long shot, but we'll see what happens.
It could happen.
Yeah, no, it could. It could. You look good, man. Did I mention that?
I should mention that Kent Jones walked in here, and he said that he's putting his vote down for Judge Dredd.
Oh, Lord.
All right, usually our next guest joins us on the phone from Iraq, but today he joins us live in the studio. He's a writer with the Los Angeles Times who was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting from Iraq. He's one of our favorite journalists. Please welcome to the show, Borzu Dargahi. Good morning.
Hey, Borzu.
Good morning to you guys.
It's nice to see you, man. I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad you're stateside. I'm assuming you heard in Bush's radio address, let me just read the quote to you, quote, "I'm encouraged by the increasing size and capability of the Iraqi security forces. Today they have more than 100 battalions operating throughout the country, and our commanders report that the Iraqi forces are serving with increasing effectiveness," end quote. Now, this contradicts something that General George Casey said last week. What do you know about it?
Well, it's interesting. The Iraqi security forces, they are being trained up. The numbers are increasing, but there's a lot of problems. I think one of the biggest problems that they're finding is that some of the soldiers are very motivated, but others quit. And the ones that are very motivated are the Shiites and the Kurds, and the ones that quit are the Sunnis. So increasingly, you have this armed forces, security forces, that's looking like only part of the country.
Is it from fear of reprisals from the tribe, so to speak?
I think part of it is fear of the reprisal. Part of it is lack of morale. You know, they join for a paycheck, they get a paycheck or two, and then they quit. And this is something that U.S. Commanders have been talking to me about. It's like, look, we recruit integrated forces, but after a few weeks, the Sunnis quit.
I'm curious, though, because I constantly speculate at, is there some, from Sunnis that you talk to on the ground, is there some sense that they will be, if they work for the United States, if they are in the security forces, that they're assuming that when the United States leaves, that they will be, you know, they will be killed? Is there any of that?
I mean, when the United States leaves, even before the United States leaves, they feel they'll be killed.
Mm. Boy, so, we've been reading over the last couple of weeks of attacks by insurgents against largely Shiite targets. Large numbers of Shiites are dying. Do the Shia believe that the Sunnis are behind these attacks, behind the insurgency? And if so, what will they do about it? My guess is, being the majority in the country, they're not just going to sit back and get killed.
This is an explosive issue in Iraq. Many Iraqi families are mixed Sunni and Shiite. Many of the tribes are both Sunni and Shiite. So I think people are, in a way, are terrified to acknowledge the fact that maybe the Sunnis themselves, maybe Iraqi Sunnis themselves are responsible for this. So publicly, overtly, they say, no, this is the foreigners, this is the Americans, this is the Iranians, this is the Israelis. Mm-hmm. And then at night, what you see is 10 corpses show up of Sunni Arabs under a bridge. 20 corpses show up. A guy is executed in a Sunni Arab neighborhood. So on the surface, they talk about unity and so on. But underground, there's a real sectarian, civil war-like conflict raging.
And it is a war that is using elements of real guerrilla elements of terror that is must be having an effect on just regular Iraqis on the mental level that is probably winning on some level.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think the biggest effect of the insurgency, the biggest success of the insurgency and the violence is keeping good, upstanding, solid, responsible people from stepping up and taking responsibility for their country.
Because they're paralyzed with fear. I imagine what about the politicians? I mean, in terms of the new government, I mean, they must be every day just afraid to start their car.
Absolutely. And it seems like the ones that do step up are the ones who have militias backing them and protecting them.
Mm. Borzu, what is, from your vantage point, the chance that this constitution is going to pass? It's 12 days away, the referendum. There is talk that the Sunnis can stop it if they turn out in numbers and vote no. What's going to happen?
I don't think the Sunnis can stop the constitution. I don't think they have the political organization or the muscle. They don't have the organizing capacity. I think it's quite likely that the constitution will pass.
Is it as exciting as our president is depicting it, that this is a monumentous event, that millions of Iraqis are going to vote for this, and it exemplifies the change that we manifested there?
Well, for the Iraqis that are Shiites and Kurds and supported the constitution, yeah, it's a monumentous occasion that they consolidate their power. Unfortunately for the U.S. and for stability overall, the Sunnis are not part of this process, and they don't support this constitution, so it's not doing anything in terms of reducing the violence.
And right, because they are the ones. It seems that what we've been hearing lately is that the Sunnis, with you know, foreign jihadists and with despondent and angry regular Iraqis, have really taken charge of this insurgency.
They are the insurgency.
Okay.
Borzu, Ahmed Chalabi, much discredited, very controversial political figure in Iraq, was on 60 Minutes last night, interviewed by Leslie Stahl. Does this mean, because obviously this is, for Americans that have, watched the tube, this is a big deal. I mean, we don't see that many Iraqi politicians on television. Does this mean he's a player again?
I mean, he's been a player for a while. What's really interesting and intriguing about Ahmad Chalabi, I think he's just one of the most colorful characters in contemporary history, is he's a politician with what I see is basically no popular base whatsoever. He's someone who's almost purely a product of the political establishment. He doesn't have any real supporters, yet he's managed to, through a series of favors and deals and friends that he's made, propel himself to this very exalted status in Iraqi politics.
And he's making a lot of dough, that guy. He's got to be making a lot of dough. He's just like, it's not even about politics with him. He's just a facilitator making a lot of money. Let me ask you a question now. You're on vacation. You look well-rested. You look healthy. You're not, you look relaxed. Are you panicky about going back?
You know, I've gotten used to it. Yeah. Sometimes my wife comes with as well. She works as a journalist and a researcher in Baghdad, and I just can't deal with it anymore. I'm asking her not to come.
Really?
This time around.
But out of fear?
Out of fear for her, and it just racks my nerves every time she goes out, and I'm like calling her every hour.
It's weird. I do that when we're not even in Iraq. I do that with my wife. Now, what about the idea that there's all this talk? One of the big, at least propaganda points, it seems to me, is that if the Americans pull out, the Bush always says that if we pull out, then, oh my God, it'll just be chaos. The entire place will turn into a haven for terrorists, as if it isn't right now on some level. What are the realities in terms of what you feel from being there? If they were to leave, the Americans, what would happen?
That's really a big question. It's a really good question. Even Muqtada Sadr, though, he made one comment that was like, you know, Muqtada Sadr is the Shiite militia leader who, on and off, his fighters go up against the Americans.
Yeah.
And he made one comment that was startling, actually. He's like, you know, the Americans say that if they leave, there'll be a civil war, as if there isn't already.
Right.
In one of his Friday sermons. And I thought that was a rather remarkable comment coming from an Iraqi nationalist, uh-huh, acknowledging that.
Yeah.
Borzu, the president is going to be speaking about Iraq Thursday. Iraq seems to be part of his latest rehabilitation offensive to try and get his poll numbers up. Do events in Washington generally have any impact on your ability to do your job when you get back over there?
Well, sometimes the access to the U.S. officials gets easier or harder, depending on what strategy they're trying, what tactic they're trying. And I really feel for the people, the diplomats, the ground-level diplomats, U.S. diplomats who are out there. They're generally decent people, career State Department officials who are trying to do a good job. And they're, you know, like, what line do I cross?
What, are they getting whipsawed or something?
You know, I'm not sure what happens to them, but I know that, for example, sometimes they talk to us on background, they give us information, they give us candid remarks, and then all of a sudden the spigot of information shuts down, and we don't get access for a while.
What's going to happen now to Casey? He came up with this one battalion's ready to fight. The president comes up a couple of days later and says 100. What is that going to do for him?
I don't think that. I think that the it's a very complicated issue. The preparedness of the Iraqi soldiers. They say that they have like many more battalions that are combat ready, but they can only go into combat with U.S. assistance. They only have one battalion though that can go up independently. So I mean, in some people's minds, that's a little progress from April 2003.
What is going on when you talk to people that are in the security forces or just regular Iraqis, you know, on the ground, both Sunni, Shia, and from whatever background they're from? What is the general consensus? Is there still a sense that are there still some that miss Saddam? Are there still some that that want the Americans to stay there for as long as possible? What's the general consensus of what's happening? What's the pulse?
I think generally, from what I gather, no one misses Saddam. No one misses him.
Mm-hmm.
And his arbitrary, violent, terrifying, psychopathic rule. What they miss is the relative stability and security of the country under Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
And they miss it so much sometimes that they say, you know, I wish Saddam were back. I wish we had that era instead of what we have now, which is massive insecurity, massive lack of infrastructure and services. If some of that would come back, it would be much better. I mean, you still have a country that basically gets electricity only 4 hours a day. And this is, we're 2.5 years into this. And we still have not created a place where people get basic services.
And what about the reports of all that money disappearing?
Yeah,
one of the ministers in Iraq said, you know, there's like billions of dollars unaccounted for, and there's every indication that American companies just didn't do what they said they were going to do and took a run with the money.
The corruption has spiraled out of control. Mm. And that's one Iraqi politician stood up in parliament and said something. He's like, you know, corruption is a much bigger issue for us than even terrorism, and we're not dealing with it at all.
Wow.
Incredible. Can Saddam get a fair trial?
I think that's a really good question. It's going to be really hard for Saddam to get a fair trial, given the fact that the people who are trying him, and this is really unprecedented in the annals of these sorts of war crimes, are his avowed enemies. You've got a government of Shiites and Kurds who used to fight him, And backed by Americans who were his number one international enemy, basically setting up the trial. You know, there's no international observers. There's no, the Human Rights Watch, all these international organizations that traditionally have a role in these sorts of trials. They have no role in this except as observers. And so they don't, you know, it's going to be really hard for this trial to even look fair.
You think he's going to die one way or the other?
You mean in terms of getting the death penalty?
Yes.
I think, if I had to say would he die or not, I think he'll eventually get the death penalty. And I think that's turned off a lot of the international organizations that traditionally deal with these sorts of war crimes tribunals.
Interesting. Borzu Deragahi, it was great talking to you.
Thanks, Borzu.
Thanks for dropping by. When are you going back?
I'm going back on the 9th.
Okay. Well, be careful. Maybe we'll give you a call out there.
Thank you so much.
Great talking. Pleasure. Sure. It's 47 past the hour. It's Mornings Edition on Air America Radio. We'll be back with Mort Mortensen in the Morning Remembrance.
You're listening to Mornings Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Momentarily, we will have the president's announcement of the nomination for the Supreme Court justice position of Sandra Day O'Connor. Momentarily. He told us around 8, so I'm assuming maybe he'll do it around 8. What do you think?
Close.
All right, here we go. Hey, unfortunately, folks, it is that time of week again when we here at Morning's Edition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Ah, good morning.
Oh, man. Yeah. One of those days, huh?
Ooh, you're killing me. Don't get me started. Leo Sternbach, creator of Valium. Leo Sternbach, a research chemist responsible for developing Valium, the most addictive muscle relaxant since Kaopectate, is now dead calm.
Yeah.
At the height of Valium's popularity in 1978, Sternbach's company sold over 2 billion tablets, evenly split between Liz Taylor and Liza Minnelli. Always the hands-on technician, Sternbach once tried Valium. He reported its only side effects were increased drowsiness, followed by the strange urge to marry Gerald Ford.
You all right? Pull your nose or something. You sound a little congested.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Maybe the Valium.
Yeah. There you go. That sounded good.
You know, the old studio had better handkerchiefs.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll get some more. Penelope sent some.
Yes, she did. Yeah. Thank you very much, Penelope. For most patients, the drug imparts a mild euphoria. But that wears off once you wake up to find you've killed your grunge rock husband with a shotgun.
Oh, no.
You know, Mark, in 2003, members of the pharmaceutical industry celebrated Valium's 40th anniversary by lying down on the living room floor, drooling on their shirts, and dreamily watching a lit cigarette burn the drapes. Sternbach requested his body be combined with the bodies of other drug inventors to create a dangerously erotic synergistic reaction.
We did your homework on that one.
Well, you know, yeah. I'm dedicated.
I know you are.
Let's get on with this.
Okay.
Jacob Marinsky.
What, are you reading my mind?
I'm not that good a therapist, all right?
Go ahead,
Jacob Marinsky discovered promethium. Jacob Marinsky, the first human to isolate the radioactive element promethium, died last month, well past his half-life. Marinsky named the radioactive element after the Greek god Prometheus, who stole fire from heaven for humanity and then gave everyone cancer.
Yeah.
Number 61 on the periodic table, promethium is a man-made soft beta emitter existing in two allotropic forms.
Ah.
A non-gamma ray discharger, promethium's particles can impinge on elements of high atomic numbers and even generate X-rays. Phew, are you guys getting horny or what? Man. Oh, wow. How much time have I got?
Yeah, about a minute.
Yeah. Even though he was a passionate supporter of civil rights movement and an early opponent of the Civil War.
Guy's really old.
Even though he was a passionate supporter of the Civil Rights Movement and an early opponent of the Vietnam War, most people still remember him as that guy who made the ice glow on all those Kit Kat clocks. Marinsky requested his body be washed in a solution of salt resins, bombarded with neurons, and then used as an auxiliary power source for space probes. Oh, is it just me? Is it getting hot in here?
Yeah, a little bit. You got a minute or two, or you got like 20 seconds. Why don't you blow your nose again?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Better, right?
Gosh.
Yeah.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
So did you have an okay weekend, Mort?
Yeah, it's been all right.
You know, we're going to get the Supreme Court nomination in a minute. I'm going with Alberto Gonzalez. Riley's going with Harriet Myers. Mm. Pashman's going with Edith Clement. McDonald says Janice Rogers Brown. Crimmings going with Larry Thompson. Little Goliath is going with Judge Joe Brown. And Kalo's got Judge Reinhold. So we're going to see what happens. You got any picks?
Well, I can't think of anybody else with Judge in their name.
A listener called in and picked Mike Judge. So maybe that'll be
good. All right, it's 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
It is now my duty to select a nominee to fill the seat that will be left vacant by the retirement of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Once again, I considered a wide variety of distinguished Americans from different walks of life. Once again, we consulted with Democrats and Republicans in the United States Senate. We received good advice from more than 80 senators. And once again, one person stood out as exceptionally well-suited to sit on the highest court of our nation. This morning, I'm proud to announce that I'm nominating Harriet Ellen Myers to serve as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court.
There you go. That was a matter of minutes ago. That was the President of the United States, George W. Bush, at 7 past the hour right now, like at 4 past the hour, just a few minutes ago. He nominated Harriet Myers to replace Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. Harriet Myers is 60 years old. She has never been a judge. She has no judicial record. It's difficult to know whether she'll dramatically move the court to the right or certainly not to the left. She's never been married. She has no kids. She is a loyal member of Bush's inner circle. This is interesting, Riley. She's been leading the White House effort to help Bush choose nominees to the Supreme Court. Sounds familiar. It sounds like Vice President Cheney.
That's why I thought he might return to type.
That's right. You are listening to Morning Sedition. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. I hope you're having a decent Monday. I don't know what this decision means to you, but I know what it means to us here is that we all got to buy Riley dinner.
Hey, I'm having a great Monday now.
Yeah, he chose it. There were some long shots. You know, Kayla went with Judge Reinhold. We knew that was probably
not happening.
That was a long shot. And, of course, Little Goliath went with Judge Joe Brown. Those two were really long shots.
Yeah.
I went with Alberto Gonzalez. Torquemada Gonzalez is not the guy. Let's talk a little bit about Harriet Myers. I mean, she was the counsel to the president after Alberto Gonzalez.
Yeah, she's one of Bush's Texas inner circle. And I think what this means is that he is expecting her to be as loyal to him and his agenda and perhaps even the religious conservative agenda, as he's been in picking her. I don't know if that's going to happen that way, but I'm sure at this point that there are a lot of people who are looking very, very nervously at Roe v. Wade and a number of other issues that could come before the Supreme Court.
Well, apparently the conservative and ultra-right-wing blogs are going nuts right now because this was not who they wanted. They wanted somebody extreme. They wanted somebody to honor the Christo-fascist zombie brigade's wishes to make this a theocratic state and begin denying people their rights on in mass as quickly as possible. That did not happen for them. I'll tell you honestly, looking at George Bush during the announcement, he looks a little out of sorts. He looks punchy. He looks tired. He looks unfocused. He doesn't have the swagger that he used to. Not that I'm complaining, mind you. But, you know, this is a jarring thing to the ultra-right. What it means to us as progressives or liberals or Democrats, the concern is that with no judicial record, you know, we've got to do something during this confirmation process. Some questions need to be asked. She needs to be put to the test in terms of where she stands on stuff, whether or not, as you said, anything will really come out of that other than the nebulous kind of blank slate that Roberts gave outside of his record with the Reagan administration. It's hard to know what the hell's going to happen with this woman.
Well, and that's exactly why I think he picked her. I mean, she has never been a judge before. And without a judicial record, it becomes very difficult for the people on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate to really get straight answers out of her, because she's gonna go behind the same curtain that Roberts did when he was up for confirmation. This is step one, by the way. Let's be clear about what this means politically. This is step one of George W. Bush's redemption tour. No matter how groggy he looked this morning, no matter how out of it he seemed to be when he, and by the way, you know, I talked to all of these different senators and people. Chuck Schumer, who was one of the people that he talked to, more or less, and I'm paraphrasing him, said, look, here, this is how it went. Hi, who do you think? Yeah? Good, thanks, bye. That mm-hmm. was the end of it. They didn't have any extensive, at least they didn't have an extensive conversation with Chuck Schumer.
Well, let's not forget that Michael Brown, also someone with no real experience for the job that he was getting into. And I do want to point out that Harriet Myers was chair of the Texas Lottery Commission from 1995 to 2000. So obviously she has no problem misleading poor people and departing with their money.
Hello, seven.
You know. But she did become the first woman president of the Texas State Bar in 1992. In 1985, she became the first, in 1992, right. She was the president of the Texas State Bar, and then before that, in 85, she was the first woman president of the Dallas Bar Association. I'm assuming that she knows of the law and how she will behave as a Supreme Court justice and how this court will behave is really up for grabs. You can only assume the worst. I can only assume that, you know, as I said before, that Roberts will get busy relegating women to baby makers and stifling the advancement of minorities as quickly as possible.
I'm going to tell you, I really think that if you take these two nominations together, the big winner here are not the social conservatives, they are the economic and business conservatives. I think these two, both Roberts and Myers, will be reliably counted on and called on to roll back some of the more, certainly business considers to be, some of the more regulatory laws, some of the laws that keep them from doing what it is they want to do. They're the winners here.
Well, God knows that Congress has already done that with this administration in terms of bankruptcy, in terms of credit cards, in terms of, how people, estate tax. I mean, this is part of the agenda, and I think you're right, Riley. What we're seeing here is this administration finally being honest and admitting publicly that they did nothing but use the religious right to facilitate their power. There's going to be some blowback from that. I don't know how big or what it's going to look like, but it's pretty clear to me, as I said at the beginning of this broadcast, if you're not a millionaire, okay, if you're not a millionaire or a religious fanatic and you support this administration, you're just wrong. You're in denial and you're hurting yourselves in the country. So I'd ask you to wake up in terms of the midterm elections and the next presidential election. But I think that's absolutely true. What we're seeing is a type of honesty that this administration cares more about corporations and individuals, and they care more about corporations than pandering at this point in Bush's career. Then they don't want to pander. They're not going to pander the religious right because it's not important to them anymore. They got what they wanted.
They got what they wanted. But see, here's the interesting thing. Suppose, for example, somebody decided to sue around some of the changes that the Office of Federal Contract Compliance made to Davis Bacon. They suspended it. They suspended affirmative action, that sort of thing. What do you think the odds are that the Supreme Court that Bush is now constituting would rule in favor of people complaining about that? Mm-hmm. None.
None.
Absolutely none.
Well, you know, when you have a Supreme Court or a government that is solely for the corporation, you know, certainly people who are below the poverty line, immigrant workers, people who are struggling, really become disposable entities.
Yeah.
You know, in the process of facilitating business.
Grist for the mill.
Absolutely. On all levels. You know, that's all that humans are to this administration and the way this type of free market thinking is. Humans are just disposable fuel for the machine of business.
Fodder.
Fodder, exactly. So who's being indicted? Tom DeLay is being indicted, and it looks like you know, Ronnie Earl, the prosecutor, has got a stack of evidence to indict him with. Bill Frist is the majority leader in the Senate, is under investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Jack Abramoff, the Republican super lobbyist, is he's been indicted in Florida, and also he's been linked to a mob killing in the case of a casino owner. Also, we've got some information on Plaingate, on the outing of Valerie Plame and that prosecution, that federal investigation, the federal grand jury investigation, is starting to reveal that in both the DeLay case and in the Plame case, what we're seeing are prosecutors possibly going with conspiracy charges. Certainly in DeLay, that's definite. He is being accused of criminal conspiracy. But in the Plame case, it was always assumed that Karl Rove or Scooter Libby or one person would be indicted. But now there's speculation that it might be a broader conspiracy charge, which could go right up to the president. And that thing is closing up by the end of this month, Riley. So that's going to be exciting to see what happens after that.
No doubt.
We've got the product placement coming up in just a minute. I will also, when we come back, tell you exactly what conspiracy means, because in order to be part of a criminal conspiracy, you don't even need to know what the crime is. You know what? I think I just told you. Damn it. 15 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It has been announced. It has been decided by the president, whoever else cajoled him into doing it. Harriet Myers has been nominated to fill Sandra Day O'Connor's Supreme Court Justice position. Harriet Myers has never been a judge. She's never been married. She has no kids. She is a loyal member of Bush's inner circle. She was counsel to Bush, succeeding Alberto Gonzalez. And in a little left field kind of fact, in 1988, Harriet Myers donated $1,000 to Al Gore's presidential campaign.
What?
That's right. The big problem here is that obviously ultra-right-wing people are really pissed off because she's not a religious fanatic, and liberals, progressives, Democrats know that she has no judicial record, so it's impossible to figure out what the hell's on her mind in terms of lawmaking or in terms of hearing cases or what her opinions are in those cases. So hopefully during the nomination process, we will find out a little more bit about her. But Riley, of course, winning the dinner, we're going to Mary Ann's, have some Mexican food, because he picked Harriet Myers. And Dan Pashman says that he believes the Democrats are going to fight this one and actually have a chance at winning that fight. Is that what you said to me, Dan Pashman?
I do believe that, Mark. I feel like the fact that she has never been a judge at any level is a pretty great piece of ammunition, and it's something that any American can understand. They can say, look, you're going to nominate this person to be on the Supreme Court, and she's never been a judge at all.
Yeah.
Granted, there have been a few other Supreme Court justices with no judicial experience, but it's very rare. And it's not like she's some kind of prestigious person from some other field. No one's ever heard of her.
I think the right will just go right. Rehnquist is still in everybody's minds. He just died recently. He had no experience as a judge before he was nominated. They'll just go right to that. They'll say, "Well, William Rehnquist served for decades. There's a precedent there." I don't agree. I think this is pretty smooth sailing.
Okay. Well, we're going to see what happens in a few minutes. We're going to be talking to Jason Christopher Hartley, the author of the book Just Another Soldier, which is named after his blog. He's going to join us here in the studio to talk about his experiences in Iraq and the blog that the Army forced him to take down. And also we'll talk a little bit about that porn site that we had, the fellow from the porn site, Chris Wilson, who oversees a porn site where he was giving free memberships to the site for soldiers that would send him pictures, either graphic or not, from their experiences in Iraq. And the Army has said that they are not pursuing any criminal charges against anyone involved in NowThat'sFedUp.com. Obviously they didn't have anything on Wilson, but they might have had something on some of the soldiers, but they decided to do a little hand slapping instead. I'm sure denying that the soldiers actually sent those things, but come on, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well, Riley, you know, we got another call from management saying this show has to make more money. We can't afford we can't afford carpeting for Mark Riley's part of the office. So now we present this week's product placement minute. So Mark, what's our product placement story today, buddy?
Well, Mark, a city in the small landlocked nation of Belarus was hit by two mysterious bombings in 2 weeks, one of which wounded 46 people.
Jeez, that's awful. So why do you sound so cheerful?
Well, because I've been looking at all the jokes from my joke-a-day internet subscription service. For instance, what weighs 5,000 pounds and wears glass slippers?
I don't know.
Cinder Elephant.
Oh. I think I get it.
Officials say a bomb exploded outside a cafe in the city of Vitebsk, wounding dozens and landing 25 people in the hospital, four of them in intensive care. Officials face two daunting questions. First of all, what was the motivation for the attack? And second of all, what did the fish say when he hit a concrete wall?
Damn.
Emergency response officials said the bomb was buried in a flower bed outside the cafe. Like another bomb the week before, when a beer can stuffed with nails and scrap metals also exploded in a flower bed near a bus stop.
Huh. Did witnesses notice anything suspicious before that explosion, Riley?
Just one thing. A blind man walked into a grocery store with a seeing-eye dog, grabbed the leash, and swung the dog over his head. When the manager asked what he was doing, the blind man said, "Oh, just looking around."
That's an interesting detail, Mark.
Two people were wounded in the blast.
Okay, so that's terrible. That's really terrible, Mark. Are there any other recent developments?
An invisible man married an invisible woman. The kids were nothing to look at either.
All right. Well, thank you, Riley. It's very informative. That's Explosions in Belarus and the Internet Joke-A-Day service on today's Morning's Edition Product Placement Minute. Wow, good stuff. Who says that? Who used to say that, Carson? Good stuff. You know what I'm thinking about? I was thinking about that moment in Network News when Jack Nicholson turns from the William Hurt. By the way, my friend, I went to, speaking of William Hurt, I went to go see The History of Violence.
The History of Violence in America, yeah.
No, I think it's just called The History of Violence, isn't it? It's just called The History of Violence.
Might be The History of Violence, yeah.
It's the new film by David Cronenberg. It's got Viggo Mortensen in it, and it's got William Hurt in it, and it is an amazing, amazing little movie. It plays out like a fable. It's a profoundly jarring and interesting film. I was very excited, and I was happy to agree with David Poland that it was a tremendous movie. It deals with a lot of, Cronenberg has met this weird crossroads where he's very fascinated with the effects of violence and the interface of violence, technology, and humanity. But in this one, it's really, it's almost a morality tale. Really a compelling film. I don't want to even talk about it because I'm afraid I'm going to give stuff away.
I may have to check it out now on your recommendation.
Well, you should check it out.
Right after we have dinner.
Yeah, okay. Because it's a real movie. You know, it's not a movie that is hung up on happy endings, or it's not a movie that's hung up on Hollywood. You know, Cronenberg sort of, he's to the beat of his own drummer, always has been. And although he's using very big stars, it's kind of a tight small picture. Ed Harris is brilliant. And if you're a William Hurt fan, it's great to see him back out in the world. Because I was a huge William Hurt fan early on. And he's just spectacular in this cameo role that he has in this film, The History of Violence. So here we go. The Army, as I said, is not pursuing any charges, any criminal charges against anyone involved in that website we talked about last week. The guest we're going to have on in just a few minutes knows what it's like to feel the wrath of the Army. His blog, Just Another Soldier, was taken off, was pushed off the internet by the
What happened to free speech?
Well, that's it, and that's what we're going to talk to him about. He's got this this big book out here. It's Just Another Soldier, A Year on the Ground in Iraq. Hopefully he can address some of those things. I'd like to talk to him a little bit about, you know, what, you know, what soldiers are doing on the ground, and what is you know, because the assumption is on behalf of the military, what they're saying, the statement is that soldiers wouldn't take those pictures, and those pictures wouldn't be taken by our guys, and that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
I think so.
All right, so I want to say, when we come back here in just a second, Jason Christopher Hartley, Just Another Soldier. We're also going to be doing another iNews.
Another iNews?
They were so funny today, we had more.
Uh-oh.
So it's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
All right, here we go. 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Air America's Morning Sedition program. A reminder, seditionists, we are heading to New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Come by, have some free coffee, and hang out with us in New Jersey. How do you like that?
Yeah.
New Jersey, Riley.
Hey.
Your home state.
My home state.
My birthplace.
My adopted home.
Okay, sir.
Clear.
Our next guest served in Iraq for 11 months and discussed his experience in a blog called JustAnotherSoldier.com. That is, my friends, until the Army forced him to take down the website. Now he's written a new book called Just Another Soldier, A Year on the Ground in Iraq. Please welcome to Morning Sedition, Jason Christopher Hartley. Good morning, sir.
Thank you very much.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For coming. So, look, there's been a lot of soldiers who have blogged from Iraq. You did it. A lot of guys are doing it. What was it about your blog that pissed them off so much that the Army had to take it down?
Well, I think primarily the reason that they didn't like my blog was it was fairly irreverent. The way that I wrote is the way that we as soldiers usually spoke, which was with a certain tone that wasn't always... you know, really agreeable for like the moms and the pops.
Well, isn't that interesting though? Because like, you know, I've seen it depicted in movies, certainly recent movies about Vietnam, like Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now, more of the contemporary war movies that deal with contemporary conflicts. You know, no one has any illusions about, you know, how soldiers behave. It's curious that they censored you that much.
And that's why I didn't think it'd be that big of a deal, but when my command found out about it, that was primarily what they harped on me about, was they disliked how that I wrote that I made our unit look incompetent in time. Sometimes we'd screw things up and we'd write about it, and you know, but they really took issue with that. But in the end, it was operational security is what they usually, well, officially was what they always listed as what they felt that I had done wrong.
As opposed to just limiting the truth to the American people about the humanity of war and what it's like to be on the ground. What were some of those incidents that may have gotten bungled in your book?
Well, I think there was one particular story that was kind of interesting. We had done a raid. We did a lot of raids while we were in Iraq. I'm in the infantry, so it was kind of the bread and butter of what we do is, you know, bursting into people's homes 3 a.m. Gestapo style looking for bad guys. We had one mission planned that all the intel we had was solid, except once we went to the house, we got lost on the way to the house because they were like digging canals and whatever. So we get there. It turns out it's the wrong house. We went to the place we were supposed to, but it wasn't the right house. So we literally had to ask the guy, hey, okay, so you're not Mustafa, whoever. Do you know where this guy lives?
He's like, yeah.
He's like, he lives over there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so then we went to that guy's house, burst in, you know, did our thing, went really smooth, and it turns out he also wasn't there because he was at work. Turns out he worked for us.
Oh my God.
On one of our major bases, you know, not too far from my base. And we're like, oh my God.
So right there, in that story you just told me, if I were a guy who worked in the censorship department of the U.S. Army, first of all, right away I'd say, like, you just compared us to the Gestapo. And that's, you know, they, we don't want people to see that, right? Well, and then they would say that you just made us look like idiots.
Well, I usually like to, you know, compare us to stormtroopers. But either way, the Gestapo, you know, Star Wars.
But they would have issue with that, wouldn't they?
Well, they do, and it's like, I thought, is this really that big of a deal?
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, they took issue with it.
Now, Jason Christopher Hartley, it seems to me that the military kind of, and we've talked to a lot of different people that have been inside the American military, and it seems like they always react to bad news, particularly from inside, in this way. You knew that going in, though, didn't you? Did you know that they were gonna that there was a really good chance they were gonna vamp on you for telling it like it is, essentially?
Well, I suppose I assumed that they might take issue with that, and so I had it aside from the beginning. Well, how am I gonna write this? Am I gonna write this? Am I gonna be part of like some self-assigned propaganda machine, or not? And like there's already so many guys who do a lot of writing. I don't want to say that it's bad, but it's very very clean and patriotic, and that's cool, but I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something that's more mean. I wanted to try to be as honest as possible, because that's what I would want to read if I were not a soldier and wanted to know more about what was going on in Iraq. So that's how I wrote.
It just seems to me that since World War II, or since like there has been a conflict that actually had 90% or 99% of support from the American people, that there has been an issue in terms of managing information, coming out of a war zone, because they know that guys who go in, who end up in Iraq, that's not what they plan to do. That's not why they join the forces necessarily. And a lot of times the country is fractured in their support of the situation. So this is just, their way of managing and censoring Americans in the line of fire. But in the technological age, how the hell, there's no way you can do that effectively. Thank God.
And that's what's kind of interesting too, I think, is that the military, leadership is primarily a bunch of old, gray haired men.
Yeah.
That, they're not always the most internet savvy, okay? So it's like they're playing catch up. Every soldier out there has got a digital camera. Half of them have camcorders. I was doing instant message every day in my, next to my bunk in my bunker, and I think that this was happening all the time.
Right.
And the leadership's going, what what does that stand for?
Right, right.
So, oh, wow.
How do you work this mouse thing? What is this with the wire coming out of it?
Exactly. So it's like we've been in that for how long? Going on a good solid 3 years.
Yeah.
And just now we have, leadership's starting to make policies about, I think we should do something about this blog thing. And it's like, we've been doing this for 3 years, and now suddenly you're noticing this?
Well, it's interesting because, in terms of reporters on the ground there, they've talked about being stifled. Many of them are afraid of being shot by one side or the other. And then you have this guy we talked to last week, Chris Wilson, who's got the NowThat'sEffedUp.com, who was making deals with soldiers to send photographs or just some sort of photographic history of their experience in Iraq in exchange for porn membership. And what started to materialize were these graphic depictions of horrendous, scenes of people being blown up, people without heads and whatever. And I assume despite the fact that many of the headings on these pictures were heinous and smug and comedic and
very
and
glib,
glib, but way wrong. I understand that also is how some soldiers think, and this is also what they're seeing. So I was a strong defender of that site, and the Army has decided not to prosecute because that you have no doubt in your mind about it. You know the site I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Now that's what you guys saw sometimes, and there's no doubt that those things came from soldiers.
No, absolutely not. And these are the ways that we communicated, especially with these problems. What do you say? Like, there was a time that there was an engagement where an entire family was killed on accident because, we mistook the vehicle for a vehicle that hadn't served. And so this entire family gets wasted. And there's a 3-year-old girl there. When you see a scene like that, what do you say?
Right.
You're not going to cry. You want to maybe, but you're not. Yeah. You just say, so you look at the guy next to you and go, yo, wow, that's awesome.
Right.
So then the guys who put these photos up, they'll put the kind of like these, these glib captions, oh, awesome, or burnt Iraqi, or this guy had a bad day kind of thing. And it's not, it's very cold, but it's not actually being cruel. It's just, it's kind of how we communicated.
Well, yeah, but that's interesting because I think that in and of itself is important for Americans to know that, these are guys like yourself who are trained to do this. So on some level, you're, like you just depicted in what you just said to me, you're going to have an emotional distance from it out of necessity to stop yourself from having an emotional breakdown or running out of the forces and going AWOL, which I imagine happens as well.
It does happen. Hopefully by the time a soldier actually gets to a combat zone, the guys who are not going to be able to handle it very well have been weeded out. But a soldier who's going to look at that and say immediately, this is wrong, this is horrible, I need a moment to myself to go cry quietly in the corner. That's an ineffective soldier. The one who can look at it and go, oh well,
right,
and carry on. Well, that might be cold at the moment, but that's a much more effective soldier and can do a lot of good in the long run.
It's a sad, scary reality.
Definitely. Now, your blog, from your vantage point, was honest, no? In terms of its depiction of what you saw and what others saw.
I tried to be as honest as possible, and I drew the line only at what I thought would have been in particularly poor taste, or that, you know, the message gets lost if it's way too gross. So, I didn't post any photographs that were, you know, really bad. There was a couple of times I posted photographs of dead civilians, but I tried to at least crop out the head that was exploded or the 3-year-old girl kind of thing.
But, see, what I'm trying to get at is, you were trying to do something that you felt was honest. The military had a serious problem with that. And that leads me to ask, is a lack of honesty about problems in the military part of the culture of the military?
Absolutely. I mean, it's at least one good thing about the way the U.S. military is you can, I mean, it's, I mean, one axiom of being a soldier. A soldier who's always bitching is a soldier that's, you know, all right, because it means he's not, you know, on the edge. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been times in the past when, like, you know, Roman legionnaires, if they bitch, they would be killed. Okay? So, yeah, soldiers are going to complain. There's going to be a certain amount of honesty always in conversation, but they only let that go so far. When you call home or, you know, you go on the radio or something, all you're supposed to say is just toe the party line, like, yeah, I think we're really in a righteous endeavor, and I love the administration and my, you know, country and the army, and I'm sorry, but I got to go. Man, that's fine. That's not wrong, but it's like, that's not, I don't want to hear that if I was on the other end, you know, if I was reading the blog. So I tried to be as emotionally honest as I possibly could, because I thought that was important.
And what do you think about the graphic nature of nowthatseffedup.com in terms of, because you yourself stifled yourself or at least stopped yourself from publishing, you know, those pictures in terms of how graphic you, what do you think of it?
Well, a decision that I had to make was, you know, if I figured if I put up photographs that are like the ones from that site, that everything else that I was saying was going to be kind of overshadowed simply because the images are so horrific that it's not very effective.
It just erases whatever you wrote.
Right. I really wanted to be able to do that, because a day-to-day part of my life was, oh, look, there's some cute kids. We did some good things. I saw an interesting site today. I saw the palace in Crete, and I saw a decapitated body and went home and downloaded some porn.
Yeah.
You know, that was what day-to-day life was like. But I thought, you show that photograph of the decapitated body. It's everything else that's interesting about the story is going to get... It's going to get kind of lost.
It's in the shadow of that. But, but outside of that, you think that if those things were more in context, if there was a way to contextualize them, that it would be okay to put that information out into the world?
I think so. I mean, definitely. I mean,
do you have a problem with the way they were presented in terms of, it's sort of a shame that the only way that photographs can get out into the world in this country is by a guy who is somewhat of a, you know, self-declared First Amendment warrior who has a porn site.
I don't, you know what, I don't buy the whole First Amendment warrior thing on his part. I mean, not that, you know, being a First Amendment warrior is a bad thing.
No, I understand.
I think that was kind of an excuse of, like, just show lurid material.
Uh-huh.
But it is kind of unfortunate. People who were very for this war and are, you know, really wanted it to take place, well, this is what you get. We have almost 2,000 dead soldiers. We have somewhere between 25,000 and 100,000 dead Iraqi civilians, and that's what you ask for. You want to see what it is, and, you know, go to the website, and there's lots of, you know, very...
Yeah,
awesome photographs.
Well, that was my thought, because, you know, we got some flack here of sort of like, you know, how could you show this? It's from one side. It's whatever. But the point of view, the tone, and the pictures themselves are realities of war, just like your book is in terms of what you personally went through and how you experienced it, and the Army tried to stifle. It's a great looking book. It's
Thanks.
A year on the ground in Iraq, just another soldier. Jason Christopher Hartley has been our guest. I really appreciate you being here, man.
My pleasure.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
We'll be back with today's Cliff Notes and another edition of the iNews 5000. If we have time, we're going to talk about biofuel a little bit. So hang out. It's 47 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, it's 51 past the hour. Let's try and put this thing down easy. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
I'll tell you, we were just talking to that Jason Christopher Hartley, his book, Just Another Soldier. His tone around the horrors of war, around even mistakenly killing a family, was just really hard to accept and deal with on a human level, that these guys are trained to this degree. No wonder pictures like that show up at nowthatseffedup.com. It's that they cannot engage. They are disconnected from their conscience in a lot of ways, from their emotional response to what they're doing. That is part of their training. That's what makes them effective soldiers, as he said. Very scary.
Yeah.
It's scary, man. Harriet Myers has been announced as the nomination to replace Sandra Day O'Connor as Supreme Court Justice. She has never been a judge. She is without a judicial record. It's difficult to know which way she's going to go on a lot of things, as we've speculated here. Riley saying that this is going to be big business's friend. She's also, as we know, a great example of the type of cronyism that this administration is capable of, being that she has had no experience as a judge, not unlike Michael Brown had no experience dealing with disasters. And she also is a liar. I will say right now, I'm speculating, but she has been quoted as saying that she once called Bush the most brilliant man she had ever met. So there's big problems.
That'd be enough to make me filibuster if I was in the Senate.
Big problems. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this up and feed it some headlines. I don't think we've ever done this at this time. Some people are probably hearing this for the first time. So let's feed it some headlines, folks. ABC News, Bush, Iraqi military showing progress. Bush, Iraqi military showing progress. Translation, Bush claims Iraqi military nearly ready for civil war. From Newsday, Army faces worst recruiting slump in years. Army faces worst recruiting slump in years. Let's get the translation on that. Is unexpected intelligence of America's youth alarms Pentagon. There's a popper of a laugh from Chris Kalo over there on the board. Pow! Ha! All right. From Washington Post, biologists observe gorillas using tools. Biologists observe gorillas using tools. Translation, builders discover even cheaper source of labor. Now, see, that one was really the smartest and funniest one there, but that didn't. All right, fine. How about this one? Gorillas seen building anti-poacher walls, moats, and traps. Yeah.
That was good, man. For all those people who never heard that bit before, it went over real well.
Yeah, I'm really great. It's a great idea I had to do it twice, you know? I'm glad that we did it twice.
What was the name of that headline? Monkeys? Yeah. What? Humans?
Yeah, well, let me do a quick impression of you with my idea to do it twice. Yeah, that'd be great. That was you.
He's on vacation. That's a good idea. Can you blame him? He's like, yeah, whatever, dude.
Oh, wait, now you're saying he's on vacation? Yeah, before you're saying he's alert, he's not on vacation. You know, you're all a bunch of liars. You're liars, and you're setting me up for a fall here. That bit was funny. It's not my fault that you didn't laugh, because your head's not in it anymore.
Did I format it right for you?
Speaking of monkeys using tools.
Little Goliath. You know what? No, apparently what you did you use the unfunny printer?
I was working in here.
Yeah, well, maybe that don't use that printer anymore. That churns out unfunny. Even if the stuff is funny, categorically funny, it churns out unfunny. All right, so what's going on now? We got, look at that. Wow, this has been the most organized end of a show that I've ever done.
Speaking of unfunny.
Hey, give it a chance. Here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. Liberals, hear your marching orders. One, open a bike shop and post the current gas price in the window in neon. Whoa. Two. offer to rent out the Apollo Theater for a Bill Bennett appearance. So so he can explain his remarks about aborting black babies. Yeah. See, that's what happens when you're tired and you don't have the effort to laugh. You go, oh, yeah, that's a good one. Three, think of a new nickname for Tom the Hammer Delay. How about Tom the Obsolete Tool Delay? fake laugh. All right. Four, volunteer to help abortion clinics.
Where'd the music go?
Four, volunteer to help abortion clinics open around the clock before Roberts overturns Roe v. Wade.
Ooh.
All right. Five, now that Judith Miller has volunteered to testify, go back to defending press freedom. Ooh. All right. Today's phrase. Today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation if you have the energy. Baseball season, football season, hockey season, wake up, sheeple. The fall's lineup calls for hurricane season, followed by Asian bird flu season. Ooh. And everyone loses, including that bit. You know, it must have been the weekend. You know what I mean? Don't look at me like that. I tried, McDonald.
He's trying. He's a hard-working man, the hardest-working man in show business, except for James Brown.
Look at little Goliath. He's like, am I up yet? Come on. What's going on tomorrow?
What's going on tomorrow? John Lennon's first wife is going on tomorrow. She's going on with us tomorrow. Mm-hmm. She's going to be live. She's just written a book. Uh-huh. Plus, we're going to step inside the liberal confessional, and we'll get a report from our international correspondent, the Scottish guy who nobody understands around
Angus
here.
Angus McBarker?
Yeah.
He's funny.
Loads of fun today, Marin.
It was.
And we'll be back on a Tuesday to do it all over again. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.